What happens in a world where technology outruns your maintenance manuals? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. We're about to hear the conclusion of Jim Campbell's interview with Rick Perry, the Aircraft Electronics Association's VP of Government and Industry Affairs. Today's acronym of the day is 147 ARAC, shorthand for the FAA's Part 147 Aeronautical Rulemaking Advisory Committee. More on that in a moment. First, Rick offers some background on how the FAA deals with alterations not covered in your maintenance manual and how the process is changing.
We have a mandate in the regulations to perform maintenance in accordance with the maintenance manuals or acceptable data. Typically, it's maintenance manuals. Sometimes maintenance manuals don't cover our repair or don't cover our alteration. So we develop what are called specifications. And those specifications are approved by the FAA, and they can be used in recurring repairs or recurring alterations. They've been used for years, but there's no consistency to them. One area of the country would approve it to one standard, another area of the country would approve it to another standard, and who could approve it was very dependent on who it was. What the FAA is doing is developing clear guidance on it. Right now, the repair specifications is out for comment. It's an FAA order, an AC. They want to complete the repair criteria before they go into the alteration criteria. So it's a good thing in that we'll get standardization out of it, but they really have ratcheted up the bar on this one a little bit. And it's something that if the repair station utilizes this technology and utilizes this tool, they want to make sure that tool's cut right. And so I would offer that they need to check onto the FAA's website at faa.gov and look for advisory circulars and orders that are out for comment and read it and make comment on it, especially DERs, because both these are going to be really tied to the DER and the capabilities of the DER.
What's happening with the status of the 147 ARAC?
147 ARAC is wrapped up. We finished our work about 6 months ago and submitted the comments into the FAA. An interesting rewrite to the 147 program. 147 is the standard for aviation maintenance schools, primarily A&P. And the criteria, the curriculum criteria had always been embedded in the appendices to 147. The proposal is to move it out of the appendices into operation specifications. I have some reservations to that. Right now, when there's a change to the regulation, the public gets to comment by congressional law. Proposal is to be able to move it to operation specifications. Now, the FAA has promised us that the public will get comment, the public will have an input into it, and we will be able to manage it just as if it was rulemaking. It's kind of like 145. We're going to lose that brain trust here in a couple of years through rotations and retirements. And whether or not the next generation actually understands that this was the agreement they had with the public, we'll be hard-pressed. So I prefer to have regulatory control over it than just a handshake.
AML-STC is kind of a major topic of discussion, I take it.
This was a big one out here. We've been working with AML-STCs for quite a while. They're a challenge. They're a challenge because people don't understand them. Historically, we had two levels of STCs. We had a one-off STC where you would bring your aircraft into my shop and I would develop an STC for a modification specific to your aircraft. We've been doing them for years, nothing big. From the commercial side, manufacturers typically would do a multiple model STC. We have this thing for avionics, and it's unique to avionics. And we have what's called an AML, an approved model list. And what they've done is they've separated the applicability list from the text of the STC. Makes amending the applicability list easier because you don't open the STC every time. It's a good thing. Lower cost for avionics, lower cost to pass on to the customer. The challenge with that is that the AML-STC is written as a hybrid with the generality of a one-off STC and somewhere between that and the specificity of a multiple model STC. For the installer, what that means is that a lot of the burden is placed on the installer to make sure that they understand the interfaces, they understand the systems. AML is designed to have a number of areas where we rely on acceptable data to backfill and to amend it. We have the authority to do that in FAA guidance as long as it's not safety critical deviations from the STC. When we get into safety deviations, you still have to go in and get into field approval or some DER to do the data approval to deviate from it. Avionics is special. I know A&P mechanics and IAs can do avionics installations or radio installations, and they can have an IA return it to service. The challenge with that is that the new AMLs really rely on a knowledge base of avionics. And I would offer that it's the owner and operator's responsibility to do due diligence to make sure that the person doing the installation is well-versed not only on radios in general, but the technology and certainly the systems, because we're installing systems today. We're not installing radios. They're familiar with the systems that they're installing and in fact are properly trained and qualified to do that installation. It's a buyer beware market in that arena.
We'll be back in a moment with more of our 2009 regulatory update from AEA's Rick Perry. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. ANN's Jim Campbell is talking with Rick Perry, VP of Government and Industry Affairs for the Aircraft Electronics Association. This conversation has involved lots of terms and acronyms, but we finish up with a simple two-syllable word that could mean something you might not have guessed.
One final word, current.
Current is an interesting. In December of last year, the FAA Legal sent out a legal interpretation that defined currency of inspection programs under Part 91409. And in there, they also said that their interpretation has to do with current maintenance manuals. I encourage anybody in the maintenance industry to get a hot copy of that interpretation because it makes a big difference. We have always looked at currency as being what's current today. This interpretation takes and revises that and says, actually the requirement was is that it's current with respect to the aircraft or component and when it was manufactured and when it was produced. So it really opens this up. In the case of my 1959 Cessna, it basically says that current is the maintenance manual that was produced in 1959. There's some logic there. As we know in Part 91, service bulletins are certainly recommended and encouraged, but not mandatory. If it's mandatory, it has to be done by an AD. With that philosophy, whether service bulletins are arbitrarily included in the maintenance manuals or scheduled to be included in maintenance manuals and revisions and reprints, essentially that makes those service bulletins mandatory. The FAA has really already ruled on that one. And so there's a certain amount of logic in the interpretation that I can understand. It makes a challenge for maintenance shops, because when you look at some of the inspection program really can date back to when the aircraft was manufactured. In 135, that's not an option because all of these are mandatory anyway, and most of the turbine aircraft are managed under an approved aircraft inspection program, and those typically mandate the current revision anyway. But for legacy aircraft, this could be a big change for us. Not a big impact, but a concern, and certainly an area where the maintenance shops really need to get a copy of the interpretation. It was published in December 5th of 2008. Should be available on the FAA's website, and I would encourage them to take a look at that.
Rick, thanks for the update. We sure appreciate it. Obviously, it's an incredibly convoluted business at times, but we're really glad to have somebody with your qualifications up there keeping an eye on what's happening in the puzzle palaces.
You bet.
Rick Perry is the Aircraft Electronics Association's VP of Government and Industry Affairs. Find out more at www.aea.net. Jim Campbell is ANN's Editor-in-Chief. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.